Welcome to Artbeat.
Formerly Arts Report on CITR 101.9 FM. Today is Wednesday, December 3rd, and we are currently broadcasting to you live from the University of British Columbia Vancouver campus from the unceded and stolen Musqueam territory. Indigenous voices in so-called Canada have been systematically devalued and diminished, and this cannot go unacknowledged in broadcast media, such as radio. To hear more, please listen to Unceded Airwaves from CITR's Indigenous Collective. My name is Maya Cooner.
And I'm Alicia. Today we have a very special episode for you, something very near and dear to my heart. We've got a comedy episode, and it's part of our live performance series. It's the first one of it, where we explore live performance, the relationship between performer and audience, what they owe to each other, and all sorts of interesting questions. I'm really excited for it to be comedy that's kicking it off. I love comedy. I'm never cleaning my kitchen or cooking without a comedian in my ear, either like on a podcast mic or doing a type five.
So the event of focus today was farce comedy held at the Lido here in Vancouver. Great local bar. It was my first time there.
Yes, I loved it. Me and Maya had genuinely a fantastic time. We ran out of there and we were clicking our heels.
When I tell you, I was buzzing. Like,
yeah.
Dopamine was coursing through my veins. Like, I've never smiled and laughed that much, like, ever, probably.
Yeah, no, seriously, like, in terms of, like, stand-up comedy shows, like, it really ranks very highly on, like, one of the best ones that I've seen in Vancouver and just, like, honestly in my life. Like, I really, really enjoyed myself.
I promise you we're not just saying that.
Like, no.
I'm not afraid to critique. And I've gone to my fair share of stinkers. This was far from that. So if you can ever catch a show at the Lido, stand-up specifically, definitely do.
It was good. I have a video of Maya on my digital camera talking about her experience, and the audio is actually so blown up from us giggling the entire time that it's, like, completely unusable.
My stomach hurt.
Yeah.
Well, this event in particular was hosted by Julia Bartel and Colleen Thompson. Colleen, who we got to speak to and is our first interviewee of the episode. So throughout the episode, we'll splice in some interviews, some sound bites, and some songs, and just give you a picture of stand-up comedy as a form of live performance.
First, we are going to turn to Colleen Thompson, who is the organizer of Farce Comedy. And the birthday girl.
And the birthday girl. All right.
Boom. Hit it, Colleen.
Now, Colleen, would you like to tell us a little bit about what you do here at the Lido and Hot Deli and the events that go on?
Yeah, so I run a monthly show with my co-producer, Julia Bartel, called Farce. And then I also run these kind of surprise pop-up shows called Horny Movie Mike, where we watch a movie and then we do comedy.
So the name Farce, do you want to explain that a little bit?
Well, it's F-A-R-C-E. It's supposed to be like an acronym, but it doesn't actually stand for anything. People keep trying to guess what it is. Yeah. I would say what people think it is, but I'd have to swear a bunch, and I don't think.
Yeah, we could put some bleeps in there. Yeah. The truth is out, guys. Farce means nothing. It's all a farce, if you will. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. That's awesome. And then you host these shows at the Lido. Why the Lido in particular?
I love the Lido. It's been my favorite bar forever. It's a great music venue. They do a bunch of cool stuff here. Screenings. It's just like it kind of feels like if your living room was a lounge. It's really good for comedy, but it's really good just to hang out in.
What makes it good for comedy?
We have a red curtain, red velvet curtain. Really nice stage. The ceilings aren't too high. Like, if you're going to do comedy, it helps to have a lower ceiling. For sound, because you need the laughs, right? Everybody has to hear you laugh, so it's good for that. It also just, like, has a fun vibe. Yeah.
And then what makes it better to, like, have a stage versus not? Because I feel like I've seen some comedy on, like, flat ground, and it's different for some reason. And why do you think that is?
Because, like, when you're doing comedy, you don't have a lot of tools. Like, you don't have anything. Like, you don't have, like, an instrument, you don't have props, you don't have anything other than the stage, the microphone stand, the microphone, and your stool. And you really need those three things to make it kind of elevate, like, not pun intended, but elevate the performance, you know? You need to be kind of part of the whole ritual to have a stage, I think. Yeah.
So you're a comedian yourself. Would you like to tell me about your journey with comedy? I guess how you got started, how long you've been in the scene for, and what comedy as an outlet does for you?
Yeah, so I've been in the scene for almost 4 years.
All right. Yes! Let's hear it.
Mustard!
Sorry. Mustard! Okay, mustard is German scat stuff. I know, I'm really good at this. Give me more condiments. Mayo is strictly missionary.
I started because I went to the Comedy Store in LA and I got really drunk and I realized that like one of my favorite comics was on and he was kind of treating it like an open mic. That kind of means like what he was doing was he was telling jokes and if they didn't work, he would go over to the stool and cross them out in his notebook. And it just kind of clicked to me, like, oh, they write jokes.
Yeah.
It's not like something that you just come up with and you say. And I used to be a poet, so I was like, I can do this. Mm-hmm. And then I came back to Vancouver and I just started doing it.
It's really awesome. And then you mentioned the like screening comedy that you do. Why have like both of those at the same time?
It started because I really wanted to screen W.R. Mysteries of the Organism. Have either of you seen this?
No, what is it?
It's, okay, it's kind of a documentary about Wilhelm Reich, but it's also about this, like, commie who falls in love with a figure skater. It's from the 70s. It's really weird. And I talked to Mike, who runs Hot Deli here, and he's like, do you have any ideas for a show? I was like, you should screen this. And he's like, well, you're going to have to host it. So I said, well, it's going to have to be a comedy show. So now we've started, it went really well, so we've started doing horny movie mic whenever there's a spot open, and it's just really fun to watch a movie with a bunch of comedians and then crack jokes about it.
Totally.
Yeah.
What's the horny part of it, the comedy or the movie?
Both. I mean, the one thing is the movie has to be very horny, because
okay.
I like that it kind of builds this weird tension.
Yeah.
That we're all watching this horny movie together.
Yeah.
Some of them like have upset the comedians, like we watched Crash. And some of the comics are like, whoa, this is really dark. And I was like, come on, you tell dead baby jokes all the time.
Yeah.
Like, what's a car crash with a little like sexual tension?
Do you guys want to guess my age?
39.
21. MJ.
Was that right?
Yeah, you know me.
Yeah. Hey, man. Vegas always wins, baby.
I used to guess. MJ is a bar manager here. I used to live with MJ.
You did, yeah. It was
every morning in the kitchen, she would be looking at baseball stats and the stock ticker. And every morning she would cry.
I'm gonna take a little intervention right now. Yeah. Talk to MJ, everyone. Talk to how many people here? Line up.
So we talked to MJ.
We actually had to, because she was like one of the funniest people in the room, and she wasn't even a comic. She was just sitting right next to us.
No, yeah, like it's not often that you actually appreciate a heckler, but wow, she was a great heckler.
Heavy on that.
So as soon as, you know, Julia Bartel says go talk to MJ, we happen to be sitting right beside her, and Alicia, thank God, taps her on the shoulder and is like, you think we could get a minute? So here are those couple minutes of us finding out
what
who
a
this
treat.
Illustrious, mysterious, incredible MJ
yes.
is.
Yes, and believe it or not, she's the bar manager at the Lido.
What?
Which is awesome. Yeah. And you'll see how that kind of works in our favor later in the interview.
Well. Here it is.
And we've also got a couple of clips of MJ's heckling during Randy Neumeier's set to kind of give you an idea of what she's about.
So now I have to get tested?
For tetanus or for something else?
It's this girl gets a job at a pharmaceutical company milking minotaurs to make boner pills for men.
Sounds like Margaret Atwood.
My name's MJ. I'm from Toronto, but I've been living in Vancouver for the last 4 years. I manage the Lido Bar, and please come and visit us anytime. Yeah, it's a super fun space, and we welcome everyone. Especially queer people, let's go! How'd you know?
Do you do comedy? Like,
no, not at all.
You should.
Really? Oh no, you guys! No. You guys are blown. No, not at all.
No. Me and Maya, we like, cause I mean, with all the crowd work stuff, like you were just killing it. We were grabbing each other. We like whispered. We're like, we need to talk to MJ.
Sweet guys, I'm very flattered. I feel like I'd be good at crowd work, but not writing. Because I think that, like, as a comedian, writing's very hard.
Right.
Like, that's the thing where you sit down and you're like, I'm going to compose a joke and somehow I'm going to make this funny.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could do that. Right. But in the moment, I'm funnier. Do you know what I mean? Like, I can, like, roast you back. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. That's interesting. I've never thought about it. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just...
So
just
you debut, we'll be there.
Yeah. I love you. That's so sweet. That's all, yeah. I'm going to buy you guys some drinks. That's the power I've got. Yeah.
All right. That's enough of MJ. Thank you for her time. Time to go back inside the Lido.
Absolutely. And there's awesome things awaiting us in there, including our dear friend Isabel Schiller's set.
Isabel.
We love Isabel, and she's just as good of a comic as she is a friend.
Oh.
Yeah. So anyways, you're going to be listening to a couple of clips from Isabel's set, a little bit of her crowd work, and as well as an interview with her.
Hey.
Exclusive interview. First time talking to Isabel, and we got it on the record. And that'll be right after our short ad break. See you soon.
We are UBC Electronica, and we love electronic music sessions.
Run for them life. When I step into the jungle.
We offer DJ workshops, open decks, pop-up parties, and more. Follow our socials such as Instagram, Discord, or join us through email, ubcelectronica@gmail.com.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
The Bike Kitchen welcomes you to Access Night, a weekly event in the shop offering free tool rentals for queer and trans folks. With the purpose being to make bike mechanics more inviting and accessible to folks traditionally excluded from the industry. Visit the Bike Kitchen on Wednesdays from 6:15 to 9 p.m., located in the basement of the Life Building. We hope to see you there.
Can I? Yeah, Isabel's just holding back some tears because we told her about the live performance thing.
Yeah, it's, you can't see me, but the tears are really streaming. They're really streaming down my face, all over my body.
All right.
Does Mike pick it up if I fart?
We turned up the level so it would.
Okay. Hi there, Art Beat. We're back with another interview. This is Maya and...
Alicia.
And who are we joined with today?
I'm Isabel Schiller.
Rumor has it that Isabel is quite funny. Isabel, you're about to perform today. What are some of your pre-performance rituals?
That's a great question. I bought some stickers before this for Colleen because it's her birthday, and Julia because she also runs the show, and I feel like it would have been rude if I got Colleen stickers and not Julia. Actually, I only got Julia one sticker, but it was a really nice sticker.
Okay, so like, well, one question about the stickers, like what are they?
The one for Colleen, okay, it's a picture of a dolphin and it says swell over it. Mm. Another one for Colleen is a drawing of a really buff horse. And I wrote on the back, you are the buff horse of the Vancouver comedy scene. And then I wrote in brackets, it's a compliment, because it is. And also a figure of a person who has a very distinct face, and that distinct face is also their boobs and genitals. I feel like it doesn't sound that good when you describe it, but it looks cool. And the picture, the sticker for Julia is a baby riding a rocket.
Wow, more tears to come tonight, it seems, right? Gorgeous.
That's beautiful. Okay, Isabel, I saw you start in like March 2025 or something in the comedy scene, and I tried to crunch the numbers, but you'll have to like correct me, but I feel like you've probably done like close to like 100 performances.
As a matter of fact, I crunched the numbers recently for how many shows I've done, and the calculation was about 144.
Whoa!
So I've done about 144 shows. Mostly open mics, but, you know, some book shows here and there.
Yeah. That's crazy, because I was counting for 3 shows a week since you started, so that means you're doing more than that.
I think I counted for about 4 shows a week, because in the summer there was a time where I was hitting, like, every day, sometimes 2 mics a day, sometimes 3.
I remember.
It was the summer, and I was doing nothing else except working at a deli. But, yeah, that was my estimate.
So you worked at a deli, and now you're here at the Hot Deli telling jokes.
That is true. It can happen to anyone.
Wow, life is just so funny, isn't it? Okay, so have you ever engaged with any other kinds of live performance besides stand-up? But we've been trying to find some, like, intersections between types of live performance, like acting, anything of the sort?
Yeah, I did theater in high school. I did theater for my first couple years of university. I first got into stand-up in high school. Like, I had to do it for a drama class, and I did an open mic that was all just, like, guys talking about their Tinder hookups, and I was there with my dad, it wasn't really sustainable to do stand-up as a teenager, so I stopped for a couple of years, and then I... Like, the first friends that I made in Vancouver when I moved here are regulars at Vancouver Story Slam. So I signed up for that show. I did it in February. It was, like, one of the most fun performances I've ever done. I love Vancouver Story Slam, and I decided that I wanted to keep telling jokes on a stage, so I started doing stand-up.
And a little note for that, I mean, we'll cut this if you say you won't do it, but if you want to hear Isabel's Story Slam from February, she will do a version of it on the air for you.
Live on air. All right. So another question we had for you is, what's your one joke that never bombs?
Honestly, I don't think I have a joke that never bombs.
I know.
What were you going to say?
Wait, hold on.
They're whispering to each other right now.
It's bombed. Alicia recommended a joke that I do that is generally surrounding the idea of having sex in a Cybertruck, saying that never bombs. It's bombed. It has not gotten laughs.
Where has it bombed?
Where has it bombed? Sasha's been there when it's bombed. Yeah.
It bombed at the last performance I was at Comedy After Dark. Yeah.
It bombed when I was hosting Comedy After Dark.
Wow, live account. Okay.
I don't believe that listen, I don't know very much, period, but I don't think that there are any jokes that are completely bomb-proof. I think sometimes the people there just hate you, and you hate yourself.
Isn't that kind of the beauty of live performance, though, right?
Absolutely. I really appreciate bombing and being humiliated on stage. Like, I think... You know, it's not a sex thing or anything. I just think that it, like, it's made me a lot stronger as a person. It's made me more confident socially in terms of, like, I can deal with humiliation and embarrassment way better. And, yeah, I'm grateful for every time I've ever done poorly.
That's gorgeous. And just to clarify, if you're just tuning in, bombing, not as in the act of, you know, setting off a bomb, but failure to execute a joke, which... incites laughter.
Yeah, a joke that just nobody laughs at. That's a bomb. Yeah.
So the idea of crowd work, I've heard, you know, talking to some funny people like Alicia, for example, that some people just don't like crowd work. Some people hate it. Some comedians would rather you tell joke. What are your opinions and, like, relationship with crowd work?
I love doing crowd work because I'm so new. Like, I only really do, like, quite structured crowd work. Like, I have some very specific questions that I'll ask the audience that I sort of know where I'm going with the conversation, so maybe that's kind of cheating crowd work.
What I do want to know is, are any of you guys best friends? Do we have any best friends in the crowd tonight? I see you guys looking at each other, and you're right in front of me. Are you guys best friends? Aw, you made a heart with your hand. That's so cute. You guys are so cute. Aw. So between the two of you, which one of you would say is more invested in the friendship?
But, like, the times that crowd work has gone well has been, like, my most rewarding experiences on stage.
And is it always the front row that you pick on?
No. Depending on the room, sometimes I'll just kind of shout at the back and they'll feel special even though they're sitting at the back. But yeah, it's kind of easier with the front row.
See, that's pretty unique because I can't really think of many other art forms which allow you to actively, like, change your performance depending on the people that are watching you, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, stand-up's, like, very in the moment. I think I'm just now gaining the skill of, like, sussing out the room in the first few jokes, few seconds, few minutes, and being like, oh, is the thing I planned the vibe for this room? Should I try different stuff? Should I switch up the set list on site? I think, you know, a lot of comedians I look up to have the philosophy of like, you know, I'm doing this for me. I'm not going to change my jokes for a room. When I say a lot of comedian, it's just Chris Fleming, who I've heard say that, one of my heroes. And so I like that philosophy, and I hope to have it one day. But sometimes I will be like, let me change. I don't think these guys want to hear a young woman talk about her vagina.
Just a general thing. If you were like recording your stand-up for a special of sorts in the future, how would that change like the way that you would go about it?
Whoa, I don't think I've thought about it because I think I feel like I'm a really long ways away from that. I don't know. I mean, definitely the prospect of doing more time is exciting and like shapes how I do stuff, just in that like I want to get more comfortable on stage. I want to like have more resilience to like, okay, that joke bombed. Let's keep going. We're still up here for a while. Because if you're doing like a 3-minute set at an open mic and you bomb in the first few seconds, like, it can be hard to save it, but I've done like now like 5 and 7 minute spots where I'm not doing great at the start, and I'm like, okay, chin up, let's keep going. And you know, I've had some rewarding experiences where I've been able to save it a little bit, and yeah, I like the prospect of doing more time just for that skill, and because I love stand up and I love being on stage, so why wouldn't I want to do it more?
Yeah, that's awesome.
One of our final questions before we let you go and whatever, do your little rituals before you go up. You've gotten the chance to perform at so many different venues over such a condensed period of time. I'm wondering what makes like the perfect audience, perfect venue, perfect recipe for a great like stand-up set?
I think sometimes you can sense when it's people who are like, yeah, like, we really wanted to go to a comedy show tonight. This is what we thought we were going to do when we left the house, versus people who were, like, you know, walking around and drinking and were like, oh, there's a comedy club. Let's see if these guys have anything. So I think people who, like, are excited to be there. Yeah, I mean, I think, like, a smaller room with a low ceiling is always great.
Wow.
That's a callback. Scary. But also good for you, you know, strengthens that humiliation muscle more often. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, you know what? I know which group I'm falling into, and I knew that I was going to go see comedy, and I'm stoked for it, so.
Yay. I'm ready to laugh.
Yeah.
And are you ready to laugh as well?
Oh, I'm ready to laugh. Okay. I'm nice. So ready to laugh. Cool. I'm really excited to see everyone on this lineup. This is an awesome lineup.
We're hugging right now. Thank you so much for your time, Isabel, and we can't wait to see you in all your funny
love
glory.
You so much.
Thank you so much.
Love and Art B.
Yeah.
Mwah.
Yeah, I'm queer, and most of my friends are queer women, and so sometimes that can get sort of homoerotic. And I think that the reason that it can get so homoerotic between me and my friends is because I've had sex with all of them. You know what I'm talking about, best friends? Yeah. You'll get to that part of your friendship.
Next up, we've got the headliner for the show, Aaron Reed. I'm personally a big fan of Aaron, like genuinely, and I have been for like the past 2 years. I found his music through my work with Discorder, and I thought it was fantastic, and it was clear that he was a really funny person through his lyrics and just the way that he was even mixing the tracks. So I went to go check out his comedies shortly after. And
you know, from my perspective, what a genuinely kind person. Kind smile, kind eyes, mm-hmm. kind words.
Yes.
And super funny.
Yeah, so funny and so humble. Like, I don't know, I'm just like a huge fan. Like, I'm like, I don't even know like how to put it in different words than that. But I think his comedy is brilliant. I think he's great in a room. And he's also fantastic in the clips that we're going to play for you guys. We were editing it and we were just like laughing all over again.
Yeah, so let's hear some words from Aaron Reed.
Mm-hmm. First, we're going to go into a couple of clips from his stand-up, and then we're going to go into an interview with him. So we'll see you guys after that.
Which is awesome. I'm taking a break, though, right now. They're playing a song I don't like. It's a popular country song I don't like, and I hate it because it's a positive country song, and where it all works out for the guy, and we don't need that, right? Right? We like sad country music, right? We like to hear a country song and go, not me, but friends and family, let's do a wellness check on that cowboy. things that you like. Yeah, and it's a positive song, and what the singer does, I hate. They laugh in the song. They record a laugh in the studio. They laughed. That's on fucking tape forever. Yeah. You know, so the verse is like a, it's about how he met his high school sweetheart. So it's like a, remember when we used to skip class? Ha! God, why did you make a dog so big and so short? Seems like the bigger the dog, the shorter the life. What does it mean? What are the bones?
Hello, my name is Aaron Reed. I'll do comedy and music and some art stuff as well. Visual art. Nice.
Wonderful, wonderful. Nice. I love it. Okay, cool. Well, this is awesome that we're chatting because I honestly just love your comedy. I watched Soft Bug Ego Jazz. I watched your special and it was awesome.
Thank you.
And yeah, in it, you obviously killed in there just by the fact that, I mean, Maya's sobbing. I was laughing so hard that I expelled all my air and then I was like, I think I'm gagging. Your special, it was awesome. And you had this one joke in it where you put on like the dog ears and run through the crowd barking. Yeah. And I'm a doggy and a little, you know, all that stuff.
Yes.
To kind of like ground yourselves to make sure your ego didn't get too high during the performance. Yeah. How's your ego right now?
You know, it feels good.
Yeah.
It feels good in a... Yeah, the crowd was very nice. I got to try out some new stuff. Yeah. And yeah, there wasn't any, like, bad energy. So ego's good, but I'm not thinking about it too much. I'm happy it's good.
Yeah.
And I tried out some stuff, so... And it worked okay, so that's good.
That's awesome.
It's like hockey style, where you're not allowed... Like, interview style, where you're like, each game is one game after the other.
Straighten the boards.
Yeah. You put it all out there on the ice.
Yeah.
And then that's all you can do.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And shout out to teammates.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And then, okay, so it's kind of funny. Like, I did an under review for your music,
yes,
like, 2 years
so nice.
Ago. It was awesome. It was the first time I was doing, like, a review for music in that magazine. And, yeah, it was awesome. And I work for it now, so it's really, really cool. And I love your music, and I was listening to it on the bus. And I feel like there's, like... And I'm like, this is great. This is so good. And there's like so many like elements of comedy. So my question is like, is for you music like another medium for your comedy, or is it just another art that you partake in that happens to have some funny elements to it?
Yeah. I like that question. I'd say that it's more different. I think when I started making music, I was like 16 and I wanted to be cool, right? And or 18, I wanted to be like, this was like 2006 when I was like 18, so I want to be like cool indie guy. So I think there was a separation there, but then now I just, music is just music. I don't really think about the comedy, but then comedic elements come in, and I like elements in other artists that might seem comedic but are more just like weird choices, like David Byrne talk singing, or yeah, that surprising stuff I really like.
What does the title Soapside Clown mean? I wanted to ask you when I was writing it.
Oh, yeah. What does that mean? Oh, it means, because it's from that song. So it's about a soapsuit clown. It's like a derogatory term for a actor who is having a breakdown.
Oh, yeah.
A crisis of because it's, oh, yo, it's someone who is an actor who squandered their, the privilege of being an artist and making lots of money.
Like, we're doing a live series about live performance and kind of intersections between different art forms, stand-up comedy being one of them, in our opinion. Have you engaged with any other art forms besides music and stand-up?
Live performance art forms.
In live?
Yeah.
No. Like, I did high school plays. I was really into theater in high school. So, yeah, I was big drama. And I wasn't, like, drama kid in the sense of, like, that was my community, but I really liked drama and did it. I was an improv kid.
Yeah.
We weren't cooler, but
we
just weren't cooler.
I get it.
You don't have to defend yourself.
Yeah. It's fun.
I'm down. We had to talk about Little Mountain Gallery Improv Jam at some point later. And then when you're recording your special, how did you go about writing it, and how is it different from when you're writing a live performance, especially with like crowd work segments, if that's something that you write in?
I don't write in crowd work segments. I'm doing crowd work a little bit now, and I think it's a fun way to like talk to people and learn stuff, but I don't really build any stuff in there. that album was a culmination of like 10 years of stand-up, but I'd done stand-up for maybe 10 years leading up to it, and then I'd say the jokes maybe like 4 years, going back 4 years, are those jokes. So that, I was just kind of writing it for the stage,
yeah.
And I didn't really, the guys who shot it were great, and I just kind of, they saw the jokes, and we did a dress rehearsal, but yeah, and then I don't really write, I just write on stage, so the special is just an accumulation of that. And then writing, I mostly just write on stage by talking at open mics, and I'll put new jokes in between jokes at work, and then I'll listen to it and work on it there. But I find I can't really sit down and write. So for that stuff, I'm just working on like journaling and like just writing.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, they don't call it sit down comedy, right?
Yeah. There we go. Yeah.
Yeah. That was good. And then I saw you at Little. I remember seeing you at Little Mountain Gallery. It was like the first time that I went to see, I think, stand up comedy, honestly, like ever. I was kind of like late to the game. Mm. At Little Mountain, like 2 years ago or something, and. You did the zombie joke with the petting, and yes. I love it. And I want to know, how has that one evolved?
That one, how has that one evolved? I like that. That's very, that one is usually the same way that most of them are. Like, it's usually way longer,
yeah.
And I try stuff out. I try and put as many jokes in there, but sometimes the problem I run into with trying to cram stuff with jokes is that everything gets really long, and I think it needs to be there.
Right.
So I'd say how it evolves is I just cut so much and just trust that the audience knows if I give a couple context clues. I don't need to, like, it comes from a place of self, what's the thing where you doubt yourself? Self.
Awareness?
Almost, but the bad kind.
Depreciation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like not believing that they'll, you know,
Self-consciousness.
Yes, self-conscious. Thank you, Maya. Self-conscious about them getting on board.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
It just turns into this, like, muddle stew. So,
yeah.
Short answer is it gets edited out of the muddle stew.
Nice.
Until, cool. Like, a piping hot, thin soup.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. A yummy one at that.
Yeah.
No. Am I kidding?
It's delicious. Off at like, like a chowder, and it finishes as a pho. Like a great pho.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to get into video games. That's what I'm trying to get into. But I'm not a gamer. Never been a gamer. My mom, and this is not a bad thing. She's just like, we're not doing video games in this house. We had computer video games for Mac because my dad was a Mac, and those video games are fun. They're like bug numbers, you know. My friends were playing like Sludge Gun, you know? I was playing like Honey Bear's Gonna Teach You How to Spell, you know?
So as you could probably hear from the background of those clips, it was just like 20 minutes mm-hmm. of straight laughter.
Yeah.
Like genuinely, he had the crowd roaring.
Seriously, like it was so awesome. If you can catch a show of his, please do it.
So since we're such big fans, we want to close out this episode by playing you some of Aaron Reed's music.
Mm-hmm. This is off of his EP, Soapside Clown. So first track that you'll be hearing is Premature Ejaculation, and the second one is Evil in My Head.
What titles these are.
And right after those two tracks, we are getting a live on-the-air performance from one of the comedians you heard of in this episode, Isabel Schiller, and she'll be reading us. An awesome story, so stay tuned for that. And here is Premature Ejaculation by Aaron Reed.
Here it is.
1, 2. Gatorade at the gas station. When you took the trip last fall, I'm picking at the paint and rubber.
I need to buy a bed cover. I'm thinking of a lucky number. Remember to get eggs and butter. Paint a picture of a rose and dry it. Someone threw a soda at the mall. Cigarettes at the gas station. You shouldn't really make that call. I regret too damn much. I can see the hurt and the grudge.
Beautiful day.
Yeah.
Are you hungry? I think I'm hungry. I think we should get ourselves something nice for our beach day.
Oh, yeah?
Oh my god, I know the perfect place. Cockney King's Fish and Chips is literally just around the corner. We should go there. It is the best fish and chips in Vancouver.
Oh my god, yes, absolutely. Let's go right now.
Cockney King's Fish and Chips Kitsilano. On Cornwall Avenue, between Cypress and Walnut. It's the best fish and chips in town, but don't take our word for it. Try it yourself. If Kitsilano isn't your neighborhood, check out Cockney King's in Burnaby or New Westminster.
It's Nardwuar, a human serviette, and you're listening to Unseated Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM.
We have been called the Indians.
Justified in opening fire that day. Amy Allen has more.
The virus took on many shapes. The bear, the elk, the antelope.
Hosted by the Indigenous Collective of CITR 101.9 FM, Unseated Airwaves unveils the hidden pages of Indigenous history and contemporary existence. We are back and looking for passionate folks to contribute to the process of putting together our weekly radio show. Our community centers Indigenous joy, excellence, and current issues. Friends and allies are welcome. No experience is necessary. Come learn with us. Our Instagram is Unseated Airwaves, and that's the best way to keep up with us. If you're interested in getting involved or you have any questions, email me, indigenouscollective@citr.ca.
Thank you for staying with us. You are listening to The Artbeat on CITR 101.9 FM, and this is our comedy episode. We just went to the Lido, which had farce comedy going on, and it was awesome. We talked to a bunch of the comedians, and now in the studio, live, I'm looking at her, we have Isabel Schiller to share with us her story slam.
Yay!
Woo! Very exciting. So for those of you who aren't familiar, Story Slam is a recurring event in Vancouver, and it's just kind of this awesome event where you share a story between 5 to 7 minutes, and Isabel did win the Story Slam with the story that she's about to share with you today. Yeah, and the championships are coming up. Isabel, are you excited for the championships?
So excited for the championships. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for asking. I was really hoping for an opportunity to plug this. This Saturday night at 8 p.m. at the Vogue Theater in Vancouver, I'm one of the 10 people that made it to the championships this year, and I'm very excited about it.
Good.
And
good. I'm excited. I'll be there.
Thank you very much. You know, I did already spend $100 on boots that I'm going to wear to it, so if I don't win, that'll be bad.
Okay, good. Good, because I think there's a style points category. So.
There definitely is.
Okay, awesome. Beautiful.
Well, you know what they say about stories. Mm-hmm. They must be told.
Yes.
So I guess without further ado, mm-hmm. Isabel, take it away, please.
It is, Isabel. And this is going to be a fictional story that Isabel wrote.
This
Amazing.
Is a fictional story that I wrote, and I performed this at the February Story Slam show, and this was my first show of that show.
Nice. Beautiful.
This is it. January 6th, 2021 was my 18th birthday. When my dad called me, he said, "You know, your birthday is going to live in infamy for the rest of your life as the anniversary of the U.S. Capitol insurrection. You're joining the people born on September 11th in that just the recitation of your date of birth will conjure up the memory of an incomprehensible, major shifting moment in American history." And I said, "I'm high on mushrooms. Can you order me a pizza?" My dad was kind of flabbergasted that I wasn't flabbergasted. He was like, "Don't you find it insane that 2,500 people, many of whom met on the internet, many of whom literally believe that Joe Biden is a blood-drinking lizard in a human suit, are storming their way into the U.S. Capitol building?" And I said, "Can I get creamy garlic dip with my pizza?" I don't know if it was the shrooms or the fact that I was and still kind of am young and stupid, or the fact that crazy, horrendous stuff had been happening in U.S. politics for the entirety of my adolescence, but I couldn't get it through my head that this was that big of a deal. I was sort of just like, okay, dang, bad stuff is happening on the news. that sucks. But on the bright side, I don't need an adult to sign a waiver for me at the piercing shop anymore because I am an adult, so I'm going to go get my belly button pierced. Woo, I'm 18. As an aside, and I speak from experience, don't get your belly button pierced when you're high on mushrooms. Anyways, there was a sharp downhill in my trip when the pizza my dad ordered for me arrived because it was from Little Caesars. And when I opened the creamy garlic dip, the cream and oil had separated and I was too high to stir them together and my belly button was still sore. And so as I was eating it, I was just like, ugh, this isn't very good. And then I was like, whoa. This is not very good. Like, the reality of the Capitol insurrection started slowly hitting me between bites of my awful pizza. And then I just started reading texts from these friends who, to be frank, I considered stupider than myself. And they were all like, what an interesting moment in the American Empire's plummet towards fascism. And I was like, right, that's exactly what I've been thinking about all day. And it just hit me in that moment. Like, I am, as of today, a legal adult, and this is the world I'm coming of age into. I should probably be reading the news right now. But then the more articles I read and the more videos I watched, the more freaked out I became by the insane apocalyptic intensity of it all, and I couldn't get this single intrusive thought out of my head. And that intrusive thought was of the man colloquially referred to as the QAnon shaman. If you don't know who I'm talking about, he's probably the most visually recognizable insurrectionist. He showed up to the U.S. Capitol building on that fateful day shirtless so as to show off his ripped physique and corny tribal tattoos. And he had the American flag painted across his face, and he wore this massive fur hat with Viking horns coming out the side of it. The average person was quite struck by his appearance, but I was especially struck by his appearance because I'm not sure if I've mentioned this yet in the story, but I was, in fact, high on mushrooms. I kept picturing the QAnon shaman walking through the doorway into my living room and standing over me and berating me for being on mushrooms and making fun of me for being stupid and uninformed and yelling at me for not answering my grandma's birthday calls. And I was absolutely terrified, and I was just crushingly ashamed of the fact that I was ever so slightly turned on by all of this. And then the image morphed into something quite beautiful. I started seeing the QAnon shaman delicately scooping me up into his arms and confessing his love for me. And all of a sudden he's saying, I know I'm an alt-right wing nut, but I'd do anything to have you as my non-binary girlfriend. And I said, do you mean partner? And he said, shut up. And with a gentle kiss on the forehead, he just sort of carried me away to safety. And this peaceful, retrospectively repulsive, intrusive thought was what grounded me enough until I was sober enough to call my grandma back. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Isabel.
Thank you so much for having me. Come on down, Vogue Theater, this Saturday, 8 p.m.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is so fun.
Well, what a way to wrap up our first episode of this new limited series on live performance. We learned a lot of things today. What role does stand-up comedy have in the live performance sphere? What differences does it have between other forms of live performance? Mm. And why do we like to laugh so much?
Well, I summed it up. We asked all the questions. Yeah. We actually figured everything out. Yeah. No worries. Okay, awesome. Well, that's what we've got for you guys today. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you so much for listening. And for now, Art Beat out.
Yes, bye. Bye, 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 bye.
like the sun. I can't see nothing, but I can't see the forest through the trees, like a curtain rising on a tragedy. I was looking to get away, but I wandered in too far. Now I'm in too deep, the drop is steep, the drop is steep. Your face ignites me, you complicate me. I may be better on my own. Wish I had known, wish I had known. Memories won't fade into a thoughtful serenade, a reckless point in time. I really should find my own way home, but I've wandered in too far into the fire. I will get burned. I can't see nothing. We'll be right back.
Вы настроены на FM 101.9 CITR. Радио Большого Ванкувера.